Hello and welcome to Game of Thrones Weekly. Tonight we're discussing the scariest, most gut-wrenching moments of Game of Thrones. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Too late for me on caffeine.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Game of Thrones Weekly. And in honor of October and Halloween, we're talking about the scariest, the creepiest, and the most gut-wrenching moments of Game of Thrones. And tonight, I'll be your host, Kristen Elizabeth Snyder. You can follow me at Cinematic Escape. And joining me is John Musero. He's a TV writer for The Newsroom. John, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
And we also have Jeremy Dan. He's back by popular demand. He's the professor of innovation and entrepreneurship at USC Marshall. And he also has Anecdotal. For those of you who listen to our book club podcast, we're going to try to move that book in there. It's a great book. Jeremy, thanks again for being with us.
Professor by day, novelist by night, podcaster by mid-evening.
So we got some writers, we got some professors in the house breaking down these moments with me tonight. Guys, thanks for joining us. And I want to start now with, before we get into the actual moments, we also are going to be throwing out some honorable mention moments. And for the first one, we didn't include this in our list, and I'm not sure why, but I want to talk about how creepy it was Renly Baratheon stabbed by the smoke demon that came out of Melisandre's vagina. What? Is that not creepy? Why is that not on our list? I thought about it right before the show, and I was like, that was super creepy. What do you guys think? Like, do you remember that moment and, like, how, like, weird that was seeing it in Game of Thrones?
Her OBGYN definitely earned the pay that month. I mean, there was some serious stuff going on there.
Yeah, I think they're actually putting it up on the screen for the people watching. But, like, that's Halloween, like, creepiness. I mean, they should have really made a Halloween special. I mean, I guess this is us. We're doing it Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
They actually are having an HBO, like, in-depth of each episode on Monday nights, but I mean, they're also featuring our podcast. So let's just go ahead and get into the list. Our first one, Jeremy Dan suggested the zombie invasion of the three-eyed raven tree.
I mean, first of all, zombies equals scary, and that was a really big dose of them at that one point. Obviously, in the show, they call them the whites, but this show got really scary and creepy. You know, the writers set it up with talking about going back and having bacon and eggs and not eating moss anymore. They're all so happy to be going back. And then the White Walkers and the whites, the army of zombies outside.
Yeah.
But you see the white breath come from Mira Reed. That is just literally a chilling moment. Really good cinematography to see that.
I thought everyone was going to be dead after this. I mean, they were just outnumbered, you know? Like, what was the chances of survival? I mean, some of them didn't make it.
A lot. Two made it out, and they had to hold the door for that.
Oh, Hodor.
The single most emotional moment, I feel, of the entire series.
Really?
Yeah.
You felt that strongly about Hodor?
Absolutely.
Aww.
I mean, it wasn't the significance of the character. In terms of his presence and screen time, it was the way they paid off something so beautifully that they set in the first season.
Yeah.
And the way that landed is the kind of thing that years from now I think people will reflect on, and that's one of the things that they'll remember more than anything.
Always.
Yeah, they accomplished a lot. They both had that very intricate woven storyline that he was just talking about, plus accomplishing the scary elements of the scene. I mean, it had cues from Aliens with the people coming from the ceiling and crawling on the ceiling. When they dissolved and scattered the three-eyed raven, he just literally dissolved and blew his dust in the wind. That was gross and intimidating.
And of course, Bran is the successor now.
Yeah.
And the three-eyed raven was like a human living amongst, you know, the last of the children beyond the wall. So now that is gone, I mean, where is Bran going to go now? Is he going to be absorbed into a tree? What do you guys feel about
that?
I'll
make a prediction. I think Bran will warg into a dragon.
Yeah.
Control a dragon.
I think he already helped Jon. You know, when we saw in this last season, I think it was like episode 6 or something, whenever Jon is left after the dragon dies and it's just him and he like has to hide under the water. I think Bran sort of like warged into, you know, someone in that scene to help him. That's just what I think, but otherwise I don't think he'd make it out alive.
Speaking of the creepy factor we were talking about, Bran, you know, from that scene on, has been a very creepy character. Yeah. The Three-Eyed Raven was always pretty friendly, pretty affable. Bran ain't that guy.
No, he's very emo and all about Halloween. So that fits perfectly for our number 12. Let's go ahead and throw another honorable mention at you, which we won't go in the depth about, but Lysa Arryn breastfeeding Robin. We can't go without mentioning that. It's just kind of like, what? Ugh, he's 12. What are you doing?
It's an 11 on the creepy scale up to 10. Not scary, but definitely creepy.
Disturbing.
Yeah, that's a mother who maybe needs to have another child. But, like, don't keep feeding him when he's 12. Yeah, that was, like, real creepy for me. Let's go ahead and get into number 11, the little bird's killing spree before the Sept explosion.
I mean, this one's really high for me because I think kids in scary films are the creepiest aspects. Yeah. We're talking about Damien. We're talking about Chucky. We're talking about The Ring. And this is such an amazing scene where they build it up with this spare piano music, a very light piano that's so creepy. Qyburn apologizes in advance with this very soft, nice yet creepy voice, and then watches almost like he's a voyeur at an orgy. I mean, he's getting a little bit of a rise out of the killing going on. It is high on creep factor, high on scary.
I'm gonna also point this scene out, I think, because it really touches on a deeper psychological aspect that maybe all of us consciously aren't aware of, but subconsciously it really disturbs us. And here's what it is. There's an element of paranoia to our life, but the flip side of paranoia is pattern recognition. So you can find yourself in everyday life, you can find yourself walking through downtown, and you can see certain things that may be a coincidence or may actually have some kind of pattern and connection with each other. When you see the little birds suddenly rise up, where they're essentially camouflaged, and they go from being camouflaged to being evident and causing real harm to people, that's the kind of thing that can happen in everyday life. You sort of wonder.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. And, like, that's not something, obviously, any of us would be used to seeing, you know, these children who are killing people. It just rubs you the wrong way. And, you know, this network of spies, they were servicing Varys. But then, obviously, once Cersei took over, it was Qyburn who was the new master of whispers for Cersei and, of course, put them up to this killing spree. But I think before, it was just secrets. They weren't killing anyone, these innocent street children.
But it is a conspiracy.
Yeah.
It was his conspiracy that manifested through the children. Yeah. And you just kind of wonder, is that the kind of thing that people were paranoid about? But then it manifests, and suddenly you realize some conspiracy theories are real.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Well, let's go ahead and jump into number 10, House of the Undying and the Warlocks. Now, this is a really creepy area in Qarth, where the Warlocks, the headquarters of the Warlocks, it's basically like a large tower, and with no windows, no visible openings, and it's surrounded by these trees, which are used to make the shade of the evening, which makes their lips blue. They drink it, makes their lips blue, gives them that crazy, spooky look. Alongside that, they think that if they drink a certain amount, it gives them magical powers. I mean, where have you heard this? I mean, this is like a cult, the Halloween cult of Game of Thrones.
Most definitely. Another key thing about this related to the scariness is, with that white face and the paleness and the colored lips, those guys are basically clowns. So we are appealing to the Stephen King it scariness as well.
Yes.
And another thing about it, think back to that scene. They had they/he had Pyat, I believe it's, Pyat Pree, had the sweetest, most friendly voice, very sing-songy, talking about we want to unite her with her children again. That's a really bad imitation, but
they
shall thrive by her side forever. But always the sweetest voice that set it up for the murder.
Oh, God. Yeah, we're looking at photos of him, as I know you guys are as well right now, and it's just like the warlocks are definitely ready for to go trick-or-treating with their... Do you think they hand out Shade of the Evening if anyone would knock on their door?
That'd be for like the pre-party.
Everyone just gets a shot of it. Well, I want to throw out another honorable mention that we didn't talk about on our list, Tommen's suicide. Now, that scene, you know, really sticks out in my mind, again, because it's an innocent child, not the patterns we're used to seeing. And also, you remember that big, wide-open window. And this is finally Cersei and everything she's done being too much for someone in, you know, her circle. It's finally caught up to Tommen and her. Basically, all of her wrongdoings has also affected herself. I don't know if you guys had anything to add to that, but that scene was, like, crazy to me. I mean, just that visual. And there was so much silence, you didn't know what was happening at first. I remember they, like, stood there for a moment, and you weren't quite sure.
I think you just hit the emotional effect that why it landed was just how quietly they played it out. And he just walks off. I mean, that it didn't need anything else.
Yeah.
It spoke for itself.
You're right. That's definitely was creepy. For me, that will go in my honorable mention list. So let's get into one of my favorite characters who I miss deeply, but also hated, Joffrey using Roz as target practice and Littlefinger's speech mitigating his losses. I think Jeremy has prepared a little impression.
Well, I think I do think Littlefinger had some of the most memorable speeches in all of Game of Thrones, and they stick out to me. But what made the Roz scene kind of just giving you chills is because it was set up many, many episodes before in the aftermath of the murder of the Baratheon bastards.
Right.
And Roz was so upset. And Littlefinger, you think he's, again, being really tender, trying to make her feel better. And he has the scariest. It just went right from being tender right into this creepy, bone-chilling thing about having to mitigate his losses when he had an investment that went bad before, and he needed to hand over that investment, that girl, to someone that was going to pay him to do incredibly bad things, and that essentially then played out. But that concept is scary. His voice in transition was bone-chilling.
Yeah. And also, I just feel like, you know, in that particular moment, Roz was working for Littlefinger, trading secrets to Varys. And once Littlefinger figured that out, he gifted her to our favorite character, Joffrey. And, of course, Joffrey had just got a new toy. He had this new crossbow that he wanted to try out. And, you know, we've got Roz in the nude, in her most vulnerable state. And then we have Joffrey, who is, like, this psychotic, narcissistic psychopath. And he is using her for target practice, just like, you know, you would shoot a deer. It is, like, unflinching to him. And just watching that sort of behavior that is not something we're typically used to watching, it's gut-wrenching. It's hard to watch.
It's repulsive.
And he literally pins her to his bed.
It's just disgusting.
It's also like a sacrificial, like crucifixion sort of
definitely.
Feeling going on here.
And it's an important scene because as this scene is going on, we have the voice, you know, Varys and Littlefinger are talking. And this scene posted right now goes right in to what became a very important scene for the plot, which is the Chaos is a Ladder speech. So not only is this scary, creepy, chilling, it also is referenced much later in a very important part of the plot.
Definitely. One of our other honorable mention that we did not include on our list was the death of Robert and, you know, the hunting accident. Only because that's kind of the thing that, like, set all of this up, the whole storyline, which I hope we are going to get information about that in the prequel. Because, as you guys know, I think we should talk about some news. We're going to do a news segment, Anthony. They actually are talking that there's about 5 spinoffs right now, but it's actually going to be a prequel. It's not going to be, you know, a sequel to Game of Thrones, which I actually love, because it's going to be a look at the history of, like, the defining moments that made these characters that we love. And for me, I wish that we got that beforehand, because when they get into character development, that's what really makes me love a character and be upset when they die. But we're going to get these moments of, you know, why people are crazy and all that in the history. Like, what were those defining moments that made them a psychopath? And I heard it's also going to focus on the Targaryen family, which obviously Robert Baratheon murdered that entire family and tortured them. And that was the beginning, which is based on the book Fire and Blood that Martin is yet to release, with the other 2 books he's yet to release. And then I don't know if you guys heard, but Kit Harington got engaged to Rose Leslie, who played Ygritte on the show. So Jon Snow is married to Ygritte, which makes me sad, because, like, couldn't you just wait till you marry Dany? Couldn't you just wait a minute? Like, I'm not there yet, Jon. Like, time out. Game of Thrones is real, and I need to keep living in it until it's over. But besides that, we also got a pic on their Instagram. They shared this, like, newspaper clipping. That's how they announced it to the world, this, like, newspaper clipping announcing their engagement. So that was pretty cute. That's, like, not something you see anymore. And I have news on one of these other papers.
But that chemistry they had.
Yeah, in the caves.
It was the chemistry they had was fantastic. It really, I think, was one of the deepest emotional beats of the entire series.
Yeah, for that I reason. Absolutely agree with you, because you really felt the love between them. And I don't know if you guys know, but season 8 is just starting to film this month, and it's going to be filming for the next year. But good news, each episode in the final season will cost $15 million per episode, but be feature length. So it's basically they're making a film. Yeah. Each episode is going to be a film. So I'm excited for that. Some news. We're going to be doing news segments for you guys at home every week, just sort of announcing what's new in the Game of Thrones world while reflecting back on the scariest, most gut-wrenching moments, at least for this week. Let's go ahead and get into Ramsay Season 5 and torturing Theon. I mean, I put Ramsay Season 5 because everything that Ramsay did, he was such a, like, a villain and someone that, as soon as he got on the screen, you had no idea what he was going to do. There was just, he didn't have emotions, or he didn't care. Nothing sort of affected him the way it would affect most human beings. So
he was a sadist.
Yeah, so the moment he got on screen, he was unpredictable and fun to watch, but it was always very scary for me, especially if there was someone around who I liked on the show, a character I loved. I was always very scared for them.
Yeah. Yeah, there was real jeopardy. Any time a character was around him, you just didn't even want to look.
I mean, he literally transformed Theon into Reek.
He did. It was the thing about Ramsay. I didn't find him to be scary, because for me, scary really has to do with psychological horror. Mm-hmm. It has to do with sometimes supernatural, which is what the show also touches upon.
Right.
With Ramsay, it was someone who seemed to thrive on mutilation of other human beings.
Yeah.
It was so deeply just upsetting in a way that I wasn't scared. I was just completely turned off.
Gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
We'll put it under there.
Well, it's definitely high on the creepiness factor. I'd say, I don't know who you hang out with, John, but I find that characteristic pretty damn scary. You know, what was key about this is it played out over so many scenes and so long a time, from the original toying with him, making him think he was going to escape, mm-hmm. to, having him on the rack and torturing his pinky, getting tons of screams out of him, to making him think he was about to be in a 3-way. And, there was psychological and obviously physical. And what made him so scary, you know, Joffrey was a sadist, but a stupid sadist. Ramsay was one of the couple smartest characters in this whole show. And that combo is intimidating and I think scary.
No, I agree.
That's a great point. His intelligence, until the end was probably the thing that made him most threatening.
But how satisfying was it to see his own dogs eat him alive? Like, I mean, come on, that was pretty satisfying for me.
Live by the dog, die by the dog.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of, I mean, he used them in the hunt with Miranda, the you know, other girl outside of the menage. That, again, incredible stuff.
Talking about another satisfying moment, how about Joffrey's death, the purple wedding? That face will forever haunt me. I mean, so obviously we find out later on that the Queen of Thorns admits to pretty much everyone at some point in time, and to Cersei's brother. Why am I blanking on this?
Tyrion?
Yeah, no.
Jaime,
yes. I can think for a minute. But yeah, she admits to Jaime. I love that moment because at that point, like, he had already given her a peaceful death. But I love that she was the one who did it, that the poison was in the necklace, that she was protecting Margaery from, you know, marrying this horrible monster, who obviously his true colors came out in the end.
Purple and red?
Yeah.
He looks great up there. That would be a good Halloween mask.
Yeah, the Joffrey's death.
To go as Dead Joffrey.
Yeah, you're welcome, everyone at home who
like
didn't have a costume
ago.
Yet. Yeah. Dead Joffrey. Go as that for your Halloween trick-or-treating.
I mean, incredibly, I thought the scariest part of the scene was Cersei's shrieks at the end. That would be a good shriek for, like, a haunted house. Just put that on replay? Loop, yeah.
We can loop that. I agree with that. I like that. Let's go ahead and talk about the burning of Princess Shireen. Now, this was just gut-wrenching for me. I don't think anyone anywhere wanted to see this. I mean, even a lot of the satisfying deaths in the show you wanted to see. But the burning of an innocent child is something I don't think anyone wanted to see. And, of course, this was Melisandre at her weakest moment. Oh, like, I actually like her in a way because, obviously, she brought Jon back. But the burning of Shireen was just really hard to watch. I mean, the girl was already suffering from grayscale, and her father somehow made her life worse. Why do fathers do this?
The quest for power.
Yeah, but that was just really hard to watch.
This is another scene that had, as John was saying earlier, these beats. Mm-hmm. There as she was just walking up thinking she's a... She walked to the pyre. She didn't have to be taken. She thought she was helping her father. She had volunteered. That's one of the saddest, most gut-wrenching things about, like, her volunteering to help her father. And the couple paused steps when, like, over about three steps, she realized what was about to happen to her. That, you know, in general, this is just an incredible set of sad moments. But that was scary. You felt it going through your blood at that moment.
That's the genius of, the writing and directing in this show.
Definitely.
It's exactly how there's so many choices that you can make as to how to play that out. And the way they choose to do it forges such a sense of empathy because the whole scene is framed through her point of view.
Yeah.
And they will choose point of view depending upon where they really want to place your empathy.
I like that, bringing us some behind the scenes writer's knowledge. I appreciate it. So let's go ahead and get into one of the most hated characters on the show, Ollie, killing our newly engaged couple, John and Ygritte. He killed both of them. Stabbed them both.
Two for the price of one.
Oh, we hate Ollie.
He got them the cutlery set for their wedding. They didn't even register for it.
This is just something, this is on our list, because this is just something you didn't want to see. You obviously loved Ygritte as much as John did, because we've been put in his position, his point of view. And, you know, they were fighting at this point in time, but still, you don't want to see a love interest killed off. And obviously, John is, like, the biggest love of the whole show. So seeing him die by Ollie was also something you just don't want to see. Especially by a child.
Yeah, they established, at least from the point of view of the Night's Watch, and Ollie was certainly following through on what they were convinced was an existential threat to who they were and what they were about in Jon Snow, that however misguided Ollie's actions were.
Yeah.
Again, the strength of this scene is that you've got a great argument on their side as well as Jon Snow's side. You can see it from each side's point of view, and you can understand why they're acting out the way they are. Again, just why it's fantastic writing.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, we have to keep the lights on here, so our live read today is from Book Club. And, you know, book clubs are back in action. I don't know if you guys listen to books whenever you're driving, but, you know, we're all so busy, so it's the perfect complement to our schedule, so you can listen while you do everything else.
Because, my God.
Yes, I mean, we all have ADD, but how about learn some more, right? When you're doing your hair or driving somewhere, instead of listening to music, let's learn a little bit more. Let's, you know, educate the masses. And if you're not, you know, if you want to listen to anecdotal, maybe you can visit tryaudiobooks.com/podcast for book club suggestions, discussing questions, and a free full download of an audiobook for your whole book club to listen to. So it's free if you go there right now to tryaudiobooks.com/podcast.
And book clubs are huge.
Yeah.
And they're fun. But one of the key things is 2/3 of the people don't read the book. They just show up to drink. But with this, they have no excuse.
It's listen free.
Listen to it in the car on the way to book club.
Yeah, and it's brought to us by Penguin Random House Audio. It's a premier-winning audiobook publisher. They have 13 Grammy Awards. Obviously, somebody that has a history in this industry. So, yeah, give a book a listen. I need to do this myself, honestly. I'm ashamed of how few books I've read this year. I'm going to get into it. All right. And so let's get into our next talking point, number 4. I don't know if I've been saying the numbers, but we did number them in not really any particular order.
It's a dirty dozen of it's scary, a dirty creepy dozen moments.
Exactly. Let's talk about Hard Home. Now, this was a particular great episode, by the way. I mean, it was a fan favorite episode. It was watched, the initial watched, not even like after your busy schedule, but the initial view got 7.1 million viewers that night. So this was a very popular episode. Obviously, it was a lot of battle sequences. And I think what the creepiest moment for me was when John was returning to the boats in this scene and watching the Night King basically revive all of his dead friends, the dead wildlings, and the Night Watch members were being revived by the Night King.
He refills the army quickly. The army of whites. This was the second one of two big engagements with these guys. Obviously, they're high on our creep factor. So another thing that made this incredibly creepy. I keep getting creeped out by kids. That's a big thing for
yes.
me. And if you remember a part of this scene where the female chieftain among the free folk, mm-hmm. hell of a battler, beating the bejesus out of tons of the whites that are pouring over the wall, and all of a sudden she sees 5 or 6 like children of the corn, Damien standing there, and she's just overcome. She is scared. She can't do a thing. She beats up. She kills about 20 of the adult whites. But when the 5 child whites attack her, she's taken down and then becomes one herself.
Yeah, It reminds me of Stephen King in The Shining.
Yeah,
except played out on a larger scale. And this scene has to be, if not the most haunting scene sequence that I watched in the entire series. It's right up there in at least the top 3 for me, because it really takes you into the supernatural realm. It mm-hmm. takes you into a realm also of psychological horror, because it forces you to confront your very being suddenly possessed after death.
Yeah.
So how
no
much of you still exists?
No one wants to think about that. And obviously, you're so right. None of them exist. It doesn't seem like it. What do you guys think?
We haven't yet.
Yeah, we haven't really gone into it.
Well, also because so much of that was still a mystery. Remember, I think it had been, especially for Jon Snow, pretty small doses. He had seen a white reanimate mm-hmm. and all that, but this was on an industrial strength scale.
Right.
And this was, remember what took place beyond what we as the viewers and what they could see beyond that fence, beyond their wooden wall. Fog rolling in, people approaching the gate. We don't know what happened next because there were people pounding on the gate and all of a sudden silence for like 5 to 10 seconds. You don't even know the creepiness and the supernatural that's going on there. That that moment when I rewatched the scene, I noticed the timing of it again, the number of beats of just you don't know what's happening, and that was
the fog.
Big time scaring at the moment with the fog and all that.
They spent a month shooting that episode, and it got several Emmy nominations, so just keep doing that. Just, you know, I mean, they're spending the next year filming, so, and I think there's, what, 6 episodes left?
Yeah.
So...
they're obviously not spending as much on costumes right now, since everyone's just wearing, you know, basic black leather. So they're spending on big battles.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go ahead and get into number 3, Ned Stark's death. This started it all, because this moment in the show, you knew this was not your average show. The characters you love are going to die. No one's safe. The show said that, hey, we have high stakes, and... your favorite character, or who we spend all 12 episodes on, I think there were 12 in the first season, we might kill him. Your favorite character of the show. So that was probably just the most shocking moment of Game of Thrones for me, because it was very early on, you know, and I didn't understand the complexities of this show and what risks they were willing to take. I mean, most of the time when your favorite show kills off the character who's been in pretty much every scene the entire first season, the show doesn't do well the second season, right? Boardwalk Empire, just saying. but, you know, this was so shocking for me. I mean, how did you guys react to this? I mean, it's the one thing that you can't tell people, right?
I think it certainly is shocking. And good for them for doing it so effectively. You can tell when you look at point of view. When you look at how the scenes...
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
We're looking at Ned's head.
On the pike.
If you go back and look at that first season, you'll see that it's a tell that a lot of the scenes aren't filmed through Ned Stark's point of view. Mm. That there's someone else, and that's actually one of the reasons why you can tell that between Rob and Jon Snow, for instance, Rob was another false protagonist. And ultimately, the story would land through John and thread through John.
Definitely.
Well, you know, you mentioned the shocking aspect. As, you know, a business school professor, I started talking about this with students as, like, this is the moment that showed us the innovation that Game of Thrones is. It's a different kind of TV show. It's going to engage with people in a different way. It's going to have a cult following in a different way because they just changed the convention, literally, of TV. It felt so scary because it felt so different, so out of the formula, because of that first death of the main character, just so daring, and that alone gives you chills. Another thing about this scene, again, talking about how they've been so intelligent in setting up the small cues and the small moments, you know, Arya starts the scene by essentially beheading a pigeon for her daily feast in the alleyways of King's Landing, and the other pigeons fly away from her, and then minutes later, her father beheaded, and the pigeons fly away again. Essentially, the exact same shot. They set this up incredibly scary, chilling, everything.
And his children were watching it, and he was just like the only truly good person at that point in the show. That, you know, everyone was behind. You know, there's always a character, like now it's John, but at that point, he was like, you knew he meant well in everything he did. And that's obviously what killed him in the end.
That's such a fantastic point to bring it back to the kids. That's what makes it so horrifying. I'm having a hard time thinking of another show, another movie, where you got to experience a hero lose their life in front of their own kids.
Yeah. I can't name one. I'm sure people will tweet at us later.
Well, I mean, just the way children have been interwoven in the horrible moments. It's like putting steroids in any scene, but it also affects kids. They were not afraid to kill, you know, 15 Baratheon bastard children and show a lot of them on screen. We see the walkers coming up, the zombies that are also kids. We said the word kids a lot, which shows you a cue they're using in the show.
Here's the other thing about kids, though. Not only because we feel for them, but it takes us back to that moment when we were all very vulnerable and children before we had, you know, the slings and arrows of an adult life really smack us in the face and make us not tear up anymore. But it takes us all back to those moments, and we put ourselves in there as a little kid who, you know, is just experiencing the world for the first time, and you see all the magic disappear, you know, out of their little child body. Like, life is supposed to be so good until you're about at least 11 years old.
Well, that scene symbolized it for Arya and Sansa, didn't it? And we have, you know, in the view screen in front of us, Arya at the moment her father was dying. Arya pictured herself as a swashbuckler and training with Serial Pharrell and having fun and adventures. Sansa saw herself as a maid of the court and eventually queen. And it seemed for, like, four or five episodes, everything was there for them, and the dreams turned into a nightmare for both, you know, like that.
Yeah, in a snap of a finger, they became players in the game.
And each will have a different answer to the question of what does justice look like? Does it look like vengeance? Does it look like an eye for an eye? Or does it look like something else? Because you can see each character is making a different choice.
Says the former lawyer, it's all about justice.
I like it. That was a great point. Let's move on to the hardest death for me ever. Oh my God. Maybe because I just found this man so incredibly attractive. But Oberyn's death really hit me hard. I felt like my eyes were being gouged out. I felt like my skull was being crushed in that scene. It was awful. It's still so hard to look at. Like that, and the mountain is like such a terror. There could be a whole like show based on him being just the killer of an entire town, and this is how everyone goes. I mean, and if Oberyn just didn't, you know, if he just laid down his pride, if he just killed him, you know, right away instead of making him admit what he had done, admit that you rape everyone, admit that you killed all my family. If he didn't do that, he'd still be alive, and I'd still be gushing at how beautiful of a man he used to be on screen. But did you guys have anything you wanted to add?
Yes. I mean, it actually plays off of what we were just discussing, which is he was so committed to his own sense of justice that he sacrificed self-preservation.
Can't do that, Oberyn.
Do you need a glass of water after this? You exert a lot of energy right there. I think this is good to talk about in Halloween month because obviously you can see it's essentially we have a smashed pumpkin up there. You know, smashing pumpkins action. That he carved his jack-o'-lantern right into Oberyn's skull.
He decided to use his fingers to make the eyes
disturbing. Disturbing gruesome. Beyond words.
And we didn't talk about how after this moment, the mountain becomes Franken Mountain. What else is Halloween other than Frankenstein? And when Qyburn decides to take the mountain after the scene, who is pretty much dead, and turn him into some kind of living beast that has like a heart of a pig or something. There he is.
he drained his blood. He added some stuff.
What would be amazing is if we eventually find out that most of the mountain is part of Oberyn that was, like, still savorable. Like, his organs were basically donated to the mountain. I want that to be Oberyn.
I don't think they have the technology for that.
Tell me it's Oberyn.
They could barely...
I just want to see him one last time.
I had a beer with him at Comic-Con a couple of years ago.
Are you serious, Jeremy Dan? We could have all had a beer together. Come on. Call me next time. Jesus. Well, as you can probably tell, that was really a hard moment for me. And there's the Franken monster. What do we call the guy who made Frankenstein?
Frankenstein. He's Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah. But I mean, the guy who, like, the mad scientist.
Oh, you could also call him Frankenstein, right? Yes. Oh, okay.
It reminds me of the Showtime series recently that just covered some of this.
There could really be a Qyburn entire
series. It was the werewolf
that
had Frankenstein in it.
It was Penny Dreadful.
That's it.
Nice.
Penny Dreadful.
Thanks, Anthony.
Penny Dreadful. They did a great job there, too.
shout out to Anthony in the booth. He's our engineer, and he does an amazing job. I mean, we didn't even tell him to add photos or anything to our show tonight, but he's been putting those up on the screen for you guys, and we really appreciate it, Anthony.
It's
thank
like
you.
The most disturbing slideshow from a vacation you've ever seen.
Oh, we have one last moment to talk about, which, you know, no one wants to hear any details about the Red Wedding if you have not seen Game of Thrones yet, because pretty much all your favorite characters died in one scene. I mean, what did you guys feel at this moment? I just remember Catelyn, you know, sort of begging for Rob's life from Walter Frey. Just let him go. And, you know, all the crossbows just instantly killing a bunch of, you know, basically the entire Stark family at that point. You know, Rob and his wife and Catelyn. We lost a lot of people.
Yeah, and again, the juxtaposition of literally in this show, you have very few happy moments. And we thought we have this great mood lighting in the Frey's Hall, the twins. We've just had the bedding ceremony of a really fun wedding. I think they had Hava Nagila a little earlier, and you're supposed to laugh at that.
Oh! Well, they're also sharing bread, which is against all the rules in Westeros. You know,
if you
like,
kill someone, yeah.
Yeah, you are not, after they have this meal together,
bread
everyone should be safe. Bread and salt.
Well, in some ways, it reminds me of a mob scene. I mean,
yes.
It really looks like, you know,
it's
a medieval version of The Godfather.
Godfather.
The way that plays out. And I understand Catelyn Stark continues in the novels as a ghost.
Yeah.
Speaking of scary.
Lady Heart, Lady Stoneheart, which is sort of, I think, what they did a little bit with John's character bringing him back. Mm. Because they didn't bring her back.
Yeah.
And
I was just going to say again, the way it was set up with these happy moments, Rob Stark's wife talking about the baby and naming it Eddard, and 3 minutes later we had the second death of an Eddard Stark. I mean, taking special care to, again, that was disturbing as anything. And then the moment you were just referencing Catelyn, and another, again, the timing of it all. She, at the end of this, knowing all is lost, kills Walder Frey's wife. And of course, he says, "I can get another." But and then she is like literally standing on screen. I think it was for about 10 seconds alone, just standing there, knowing what's coming. No one else in the frame until a Frey comes and slits her throat. That was incredibly well set up.
But jumping ahead, how satisfying was it to see Arya take out all the rest of the Freys in the beginning of the season?
It was cathartic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, they started the entire this past season with that, I think, was just a brilliant choice.
Well, what's amazing is we don't put the Arya moments in scary, creepy, you know, the ending of this, you know, with the Frey pie, then the the Walder facial, and then the murder of 20 Frey sons.
I mean
that should be a very scary moment.
She literally has a different costume whenever she wants. She can put on a different face.
Very,
so
very Halloweeny. It's like you going to the 12 parties you do.
Exactly. I put on a different face every time. You'll never recognize me. But guys, we are out of time, unfortunately. But as our last moments pass in the show, we wanted to say, going forward in the last season, what would be the scariest moment for us that would happen? Mine would be the death of Dany. If Daenerys dies, like, that would be the most horrifying thing for me, because I want her to obviously take the throne. What about you guys?
I think the most terrifying thing is to my favorite character at the moment is Jaime, because of how he has undergone such a dramatic transformation. His character has arced from the beginning, and although I do expect him to die before the last episode, and then to face the horrifying predicament of being one of the undead and being conscious of it while he is undead and unable to rectify it.
That's really freaking spooky.
Yeah, what they haven't done yet is reanimate any of our characters, right? And making them into a white. That would be its own scary vision. I'm just dreading the shortened season. This season, I thought they had some trouble condensing it. I hope by making it feature length, they don't make this season scary for us as viewers. You know, use the storytelling, use the time, and do it right.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, the last season, there's going to be a lot of deaths. The death of the old generation. I can't wait for Jamie just to strangle his sister. But anyway, thank you so much, Jeremy Dan, for being here. And thank you so much to John Musero for being here, the writer on The Newsroom. I'm sure a lot of you watch that. We do an after show here for it. And thank you guys for tuning in every week still for our Game of Thrones weekly show. You know, I'll be hosting once a month with all the other panel members. So hopefully Jeremy and John will join us again, and hopefully you will too. Have a great night.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Valor Morghulis.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.